Consultants estimate an economic loss if Skagway can't dock bigger ships. And a disagreement over a right-of-way in a Haines neighborhood raises questions for property owners. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Abby Collins. Those stories and more, up next. If Skagway doesn't renovate its port for larger cruise ships, it could miss out on $15 to $30 million over 20 years. But even without bigger ships, visitor revenue will still increase. That was the message port consultants delivered to Skagway residents last week. KHNS's Emily Files was there and has this report.
It's difficult to overstate Skagway's reliance on tourism. More than two-thirds of the city's revenue comes from sales tax, cruise passenger head tax, and bed tax. To what degree that revenue increases depends on the decisions Skagway makes over the next couple months.
This is, you know, without dramatizing it, this is the most important decision you'll make probably for the next 20 years.
Sean McFarlane is with Moffitt & Nickel, a port consulting firm hired by the city.
There are cruise ships waiting to come in 2019. There's not a lot of time for more navel gazing.
Here's the situation. Even more massive cruise ships are expected in Alaska in 2 years. Skagway doesn't have the dock capacity to accept more than one mega ship at a time. In order to build a floating dock that would create more capacity, the city needs access to property currently leased by a private company. White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad has said it will cooperate on those improvements, but only if it gets a guarantee its lease will continue past its current expiration date in 2023. McFarlane said working with White Pass is the best bet to meet the deadline for bigger ships.
You already have context and a player in place with White Pass to allow that project to move forward.
Moffitt & Nickel conducted an economic analysis where they projected how much income the city would lose without a floating dock for larger cruise ships. First, there's the question of whether smaller ships would take advantage of the open dock space if the mega ships weren't able to make port calls. McFarlane says that's not likely, but if it were to happen, Cordova says Skagway could lose out on about 2,000 passengers per week in 2019.
We're still saying that there's going to be an increase in cruise ship passengers that are coming to Skagway. Even in the constrained case, you're going to have more passengers than you have today, but it's going to be about 2,000 less than what you could have had, you know, had the projections worked out.
The 2,000 visitors per week equates to about 40,000 throughout the whole 2019 season. That's a conservative estimate. If no smaller ships are waiting in the wings to take advantage of empty dock space, Skagway could lose 4,000 passengers per week. Cordova says the total estimated loss in revenue is between $15 and $30 million over a 20-year period. Again, Cordova says without the bigger ships, Skagway's visitor income would still increase, but the city just wouldn't be able to capture all of the money it could. Another Moffitt & Nickel subcontractor, Julie Deneen, conducted an appraisal of Skagway's tidelands and uplands. A proposed new lease with White Pass would cover just the tidelands beneath the Orr and Broadway docks. Deneen says tidelands typically lease for 6-7% of the land value. If the city were to follow that rationale, Deneen says the annual lease payments would be about $60,000 at the low end and $94,000 at the high end. That's significantly less than the yearly rent payment of $200,000 proposed by White Pass. It's also less than what the railroad is paying right now. White Pass has controlled the majority of Skagway's waterfront, including cruise operations, for decades. Some residents don't want to sign a longer lease because they want the city to take over management of the port. Moffitt & Nickel also researched port governance structures. They gave examples of ports which, like Skagway, have a public-private partnership and others in which the government oversees operations itself. One of Moffitt & Nickel's main points was that if Skagway were to create a port authority and transition to a more active role, it would be a long process. And as one consultant put it, time is not on Skagway's side. The full Moffitt & Nickel reports are at skagway.org. In Skagway, I'm Emily Files.
The question of whether a right-of-way actually exists is causing big concerns for a Mount Riley Road neighborhood in Haines. The access path has not been consistently documented by the borough, and the issue is raising questions about municipal record keeping. People's property value and ability to access their land are at stake.
We're being asked to vacate a portion of a right-of-way that doesn't appear on any plat.
That's Planning Commission Chair Rob Goldberg.
It's a phantom right-of-way until it's proven to us that it exists.
Greg Seymour and Ella Sokolowska went to the commission to try to have part of a right-of-way that is believed to run through their property vacated. They've owned their land off Mount Riley Road for several years, but the question of access came up recently. The right-of-way would extend to Beach Road. Here's Seymour.
I'd heard that there was a 50-foot right-of-way, but it wasn't in any of my documentation when I purchased the property.
Kagan Goodmanson recently bought property in the area. To ensure his access to the land from Mount Riley Road, realtor Dave Long did some research and found Bureau of Land Management patents that were transferred to the borough. They say the area in question is subject to a right-of-way not exceeding 50 feet in width. Long said it's common for this information to get lost.
Surveyors leave information off of plats a lot. If the surveyor doesn't have that patent or that deed in hand, he won't include it on the plat because he's not proven that it exists. No one has ever produced these deeds before.
Goldberg said he's not satisfied with the language in the patents and suggested getting an opinion from the borough attorney before moving forward with any decision.
It's subject to a right-of-way not exceeding 50 feet in width. It does not say that there exists a right-of-way that's 50 feet wide. This is a placeholder. This is a placeholder for further surveying that could create a right-of-way along this property. This does not say that there is a right-of-way, in my opinion.
There is a lot at stake for landowners. Seymour and Sokolowska say they oriented their house based on their plat, which does not show the right-of-way. Now their planned location of a septic system is at stake, as well as future plans for the property.
It's a frustrating situation.
That's Dustin Craney. He and his wife Katie also own property in the neighborhood. The Craneys say they sought to access their land from the location in question, but were told there was no public access there. Craney says the right-of-way wasn't shown on any plats when they bought their property, and it takes up about a sixth of their land.
We feel like it definitely affects the way we would have developed our property and the value of our property. I don't think we would have offered what we offered for our property had we known about that right-of-way. We certainly wouldn't have built an expensive driveway on the other side of our property had we known about that right-of-way.
But other property owners in the neighborhood say they've known about the existence of a right-of-way for a long time and have made plans for the future based on that knowledge. Here's Thomas Andreessen.
I thought it was kind of public knowledge, especially when I looked at the 2006 assessor's map that showed at least part of that right-of-way down through there. It needs to be maintained simply because it's the most direct route for utilities from Mount Riley Road down to Beach Road.
The Andreessens say their property would be adversely affected if the right-of-way was vacated. Richard and Carol Flagel also submitted written comment to the Planning Commission supporting maintaining the access. The Flagels say the right-of-way has been used historically for several reasons, including access for selective logging and berry harvesting. And they say they plan to utilize the right-of-way in future plans to subdivide their property. In a memo to the Planning Commission, Borough Manager Deborah Schnabel recommends maintaining the access. She said the borough does not keep a comprehensive record of all rights of way in town. But she said evidence, including a 2006 assessor's map and the BLM patents, provide a high probability that the access exists. And Schnabel said it's in the borough's best interest to develop a thoroughfare between Beach Road and Mount Riley Road. The commission is waiting for advice from the attorney before moving forward with a recommendation to the assembly. Either way, there will be some Haines residents who are negatively affected by the so-called phantom right-of-way. On Tuesday, Haines residents will have a chance to weigh in on potential ballot questions, sin taxes on tobacco and marijuana, and more. The Haines Assembly is holding public hearings on a slate of proposals. Two are potential ballot questions that could be decided in this October's election. One would create a new police service area for neighborhoods outside the town site. The other would change the charter to make the borough manager the only municipal employee who serves at the pleasure of the assembly. The assembly is also considering excise taxes on tobacco and marijuana, limits on per diem payments in borough contracts, and a sales tax exemption card requirement. All of these proposals need to go to a second public hearing as well. The assembly meeting is set for Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. in assembly chambers. For KHNS News, I'm Abby Collins. Thanks for joining us this evening.